Hey, everybody there. Welcome to another brand new episode of the Because Cannabis podcast every single Wednesday, 4:20 p.m. on YouTube and every single week on Spotify with video and anywhere that you listen to audio podcasts, brand new episodes of the show debut. New shows like we had last week where Dustin and I break down a lot of the headlines happening in the industry. And then shows like today where we find amazing folks working in the cannabis industry and we get to highlight them. We get to highlight their stories. We get to highlight a lot of stuff and learn a lot of stuff, Dustin. That might be. Welcome to the show, Dustin Cobb. I'm BC Wayman. That's Dustin. How you doing today, buddy?
Man, I'm doing awesome today. Feels like
I am as well. Wound up as always. That might be one of the perks. It's not the free weed. Only King Palm sent us free stuff so far, but you know, it was great. It's not the free stuff, but maybe the best perk of the job, so to speak. Is it a job if you don't get paid? I'm not sure. The best perk of whatever this is, Dustin Cava, is the ability to learn. Education, yeah. Right? It's a buzzword everyone always talks about in this industry. You got to be more educated. I don't think, though, Dustin, that they're always taking the time to educate themselves. But that's what this is. It's like a one-hour lesson. Every single week, whether it's current news and headlines or whether it's backstories and advice from those who have walked the walk and talked the talk in this industry, it's a really amazing experience. And ironically, Dustin, I find myself, where do you think and how have your, I guess your vibe or your mindset, has it shifted? We're coming up on what, 2 years almost that we've been doing the show, talking to a ton of people. I have changed dramatically in my thought process and how I think about the plant. I feel like I started way more commercially naive and not caring as much about the plant and Mother Earth. And I'm like, I'm ready to grow in the backyard. I'm ready to just wear more tie-dye. I may even grow a beard like you, Dustin. I'm not sure what I'm going to do, but I'm feeling more in touch with the plant in the industry. Have you shifted? You always started, and that was kind of how we began. I was more of the yin to the yang. I was more business, and you were more kind of focused on the patients and the people and the plant. And are you still that way? Are you becoming more frustrated? What's your mindset been over the last couple of years as we've been doing this and learning and talking with so many amazing folks?
Man, I think I'm actually more sympathetic to the industry now than I ever was. I think before I was so customer focused and their stories really moved me enough. But now I think I just, as much as I have problems within the industry and the way it works and how it markets itself, I am way more sympathetic to those who are taking part in it and really trying to build something under the current guidelines, under anything. It's actually pretty incredible the resilience that you have to have in order to compete in this market.
It is pretty incredible. That is a through line of many of our guests, resilience, right? In that era. I'm excited today to talk with Terrence White, our guest today, because it's an area we haven't talked with someone from. We haven't had much experience with people in the Virginia, in the Maryland. I know we had a
We always have Gibby. Gibby is large. Gibby
is in Virginia, but we don't talk as much policy and stuff with Gibby. We talk a lot of his great products at Licit Glass that he makes down there. Shout out to Licit Glass, one of the best producers of American glassware in the country, based out of Virginia. Licit Glass, Gibby Dowdy, a friend of the show. But we haven't really talked DC policy as much, and It's always an interesting experience. We get a lot of folks from out west, a lot of folks from Colorado and such, so we get to hear some of those original cities and states. But ironically enough, you know, thanks to a few folks, the D'Angelo's out there and some other folks, DC is kind of a longer time original legal state, even, or what's a technicality, legal area. I should know my geography.
Territory, yeah.
Territory, I don't know, something like that. Our guest is down below, Lynn, in the waiting room, just shaking his head, like, what are these people? I have no idea. Well, yeah, you're correct. We don't have any idea. But we kind of pretend, right? Around the air, we have microphones. It makes us official. overall, it just gets right there, Terrence. As I'm saying this, as I'm clearly have no idea what DC is technically called, are you embarrassed already? Like, what are these?
No, guys. Most people don't understand. DC is a territory. Just like Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands. And unfortunately, you know, we've been fighting for statehood or that 51st state for, oh man, I've been here 28 years, so longer than I've been here. Our tax is taxation without representation. So that
there it taxes is. Without any say, exactly. Tax without any representation. You have guys that are flying in from all over the country, staying 2 days out of the month, and getting to dictate what and how you guys operate, which is a really hard space to be in, which none of us actually have to deal with.
Except and it used to didn't be that way. I don't know if you guys recall, maybe you're old enough or not, but DC had a mayor named Marion Barry. And Marion Barry got convicted for drugs. It wasn't even drugs. I can't remember his charge, so I don't want to be stating it wrong. But basically what that was Congress power to snatch DC authority back from them. And basically when DC lost his representation, because up until that time, and I think that was, my mind is not as good as it used to be, but that limited DC's power at that point, because the city once had the power to make all decisions without Congress interfering. And that's why we're in the pickle or the jam we are right now, because we basically have a rider over our recreation, adult use here in DC, because Andy Harris, who sits as a U.S. congressman from Maryland, put a rider on DC so they couldn't do adult use. That's how I-71 and gifting came about in DC, because we needed a loophole. Well, fast forward today, that loophole is closing and we all have to go to the medical side. And we're still fighting to get our recreational or adult use rights back from the rider.
It's really incredible. Just a quick fact check. Marion Barry, I believe it was, I think he got busted for drugs. I think it was coke. It wasn't like a hotel thing. It was a hotel thing. It was like an undercover sting or something like that.
He became one of my mentors. And if he could tell the story, I don't like, getting into it too deep.
Sure.
But, it was bigger than, it was always sought at all, because he was the guy that had more power in D.C. than the president. And that was a big issue, especially among Republicans at that time. And you're talking the Reagan era, right? Mm-hmm. The Reagan and Bush era. And so politics played a big piece in why that happened. So, at that time, the FBI and the Attorney General, along with Congress, that he was hitman number one. They wanted to take that power away from DC, and they did, and we've never regained that power since. So we're at the mercy of the federal government in terms of budget and how things are done. If they don't want something in DC, they have the right to veto anything that our city council and mayor brings to their footstep. It's a 30-day process after a bill is passed, and then it goes to Congress, and they can veto that bill and send it back down or approve it.
At what point, due to all of the setbacks and the tribulations that you guys have had to kind of work through in order to kind of sell cannabis or gift cannabis, what do you think sets DC apart? What the market apart? What do you think that you guys have to offer to all the other markets that have not had the same situations happen to them?
Well, being an elusive, a black market, when you get the best product, a lot of these states, you guys, Ohio, you coming on, a lot of these states are, people don't know how to grow. They don't know what products, so they can't basically speak to the actual connoisseur. And when you're able to, when I got into business, I wanted to take the stitch and stigma off of cannabis. I wanted to make it luxury, which we have, make it an experience. And one of the things that BC that you talked about was educating people, you know, first time users or new users, how to become connoisseurs, what's good, what's bad. Just because they rap about it, that doesn't mean it's good. you know, and
no one ever does super specific raps. I haven't heard the cannabinoid rap yet, where someone's breaking down like CBD and CBN and the differences. Right. No one's rapping flavonoids.
Yeah, no, right now. Everybody's throwing a name out, and that name is supposed to be whatever, right?
Some but, Skittles. That's all they say. Gorilla glue.
Yeah, you're right. But you know, when you start talking about strands and you start talking about different products, whether it's edibles or vapes or actually the flower, and Dustin, you talked, you know, when BC was introducing you and you knowing the municipal side and the plant side, it's all about the plant. And a lot of times people don't have, you know, me, you know, I haven't smoked in 28 years, but I've still been close to the plant. Mm-hmm. So the reality of the matter is knowing the product and knowing the people, the connoisseur, and the consumer. And we've been blessed to do so because, you know, if you look at Virginia, they've really just screwed up their whole cannabis program, right? Maryland.
Go on. Sorry.
And Maryland has done a good job. At first, it was a little shaky and they're rebounding, but still, you know, what makes Maryland supersede DC is recreational. And I could tell you from a business standpoint, my sales are down 10% from last year because Maryland's recreational. Huh. Before I had that, you know, that connoisseur driving the city, that 30-40 minute ride, find parking to come. Now he'll pass 7 or 8 dispensaries. Now, if he's in the city and he wants better product, of course, he's gonna stop by. But if you look at it as a whole, that's what, you know, that's what the issue is. And if you look at product wise, DC is stronger from the illicit or the gray market side. Now, if we start talking cultivation side, still got a long ways to go.
That makes me think when I was listening to kind of what the Virginia governor was saying about why he's vetoing the bill, why he's changing and wants to stop a lot of what was voted in or not allow certain things to go through, it seemed that his exact fear is he's saying the same words as you, but you're saying the black market has been great. And he's saying we're terrified of the black market. The black market grows.
I believe he said terrified of organized crime was his quote that he said. He's terrified of the mafia apparently moving in and selling.
So here's a problem, adult use. You know, Virginia turned, you know, at any corner in DC, you can go to and you can find a dope beverage store, right? You can get you out. You can get a liquor store in every corner. Virginia has what they call the ABC stores, right?
Yep.
So if it was that bad, once you just make it, you know, just like the ABC
store. And I thought that they originally were. I thought out of any state that was actually going to make it a state store situation, it was going to be Virginia. And I thought that's what the plan was from the beginning. But as the law took fold and started being it none of that conversation ever came up again.
The problem with Yonkin is Yonkin.
Yeah.
You know, so the he'll stand in his own way and to see his own shadow. And that's, you know, when you are that arrogant as a politician to understand that you're in a state that can do a net sales north of $1.5 billion and what those taxes would do to a state like Virginia. In terms, it's not a poor state at all. It's one of the richest states in the union. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, they're a commonwealth. Everything's taxed. So highways, bridges, all the things, unemployment, you name it. And if you take Northern Virginia, which is one of the most lucrative areas in the country, and you tell them that they got adult use there, they have no reason to come in DC now. So it's crazy. You're sending tax dollars to a territory in Maryland and in the District of Columbia. Why?
Yeah.
How smart is that?
Okay, so let's say that Virginia actually passes an adult use. They have dispensaries they're selling. If you are no longer the place for out of state people to come through or for people to enter into the territory to buy from you guys, where does that leave your market? How do you scale that? How do you expand your reach and truly succeed?
It's down to this. DC saw 22 million people last year. 22 million.
Wow.
DC has that some,
from just from just people coming in to see
tourism, right?
Tourism makes perfect sense.
Tourism. So we're never going to suffer.
Yeah.
When it comes to that, there's only New York City, maybe, that gets more people. I mean, that that gets more people than DC.
Yeah.
We have all the tourism, the monuments, the, you know, all the things, the cherry blossom just happened. Mm-hmm. You know, we get people from around the world just to come see trees blossom. Right. If you think it from that attitude, then that's how we survive. But more than anything else, I think that, you know, and along with me being the founder of Monco, I'm also the chairman of the I-71 committee, which in 2022, we got a lot of these laws up to date now, that's coming aboard as us being getting a pathway to a license. Do we still have a long ways to go? Absolutely. I won't stop until DC is recreational. But there's a lot of different things that are happening so that we can't get recreational. Number one, I spoke about was a rider. Number two is Joe Biden and his administration, because they can override that rider. If they would have put DC adult use in their budget, then we could have, you know, regular schedule programming, right? Back on track to have an adult use market, which we believe that can be north of $700, $800 million. If we continue to grow tourism at that way, we can have a $700 or $800 million a year adult use business here in DC. The cars are on the table. We're 8.8 square mile territory that sees 22 million.
I was just putting all that into perspective. It just almost
think about that. We're an 8.8 square mile city or territory that sees over 22 million people a year. Wow. You do the math.
It's an incredible amount of people that you push through, but think I think it though.
BC, and I'm sorry to cut you off. You take 22 million, we'll divide it in half. Kids and people who don't smoke. We're down 11 million people. I think right now 47% of Americans say they smoke once a week or once a month. That's what the last number I saw, something like that. Mm-hmm. That's 11 million times 47% of 11 million, say almost 50%. So that's over 5 million people in a city that's roughly 900,000 people.
Yeah.
Come on. The state of Maryland is 4 million people, guys.
When you're thinking about that 8 mile radius or stretch, you know, of business, how the heck do we issue these licenses in a fair way that one doesn't oversaturate it and provides a legit opportunity to anyone involved? And then two, it just seems like there's a lot of people who want to have a license in a very small place. So how do you go about that, you know, in a fair manner, in a manner that really makes a difference to what you represent?
Well, think about this. We got 8.8 square miles, but you got to remember over four of those square miles is federal government parks and federal buildings. So we're down to 4.8.
Wow. Oh, I just get smaller and smaller.
Exactly. So
it's a very dense area. Mm-hmm. What we try to do and what we're working on, I've been working on with ABBA and which oversees the DC licenses here in DC and other advocates. We want most cities want a 5-to-1 ratio cultivation mm-hmm. to dispensaries, right? Mm-hmm. Or dispensaries to cultivation, excuse me. You know, we're looking at probably a 7-1 after July. Hopefully they're going to put a cap on the licenses. We'll probably have about 70 licensees when it's all said and done, right?
Yeah.
2-year moratorium, no license. It's going to take cultivation. The problem here is industrial buildings. Everything here is indoor. It's not Ohio, guys. I can't go to Maryland and buy land to ship because we don't have interstate commerce. So we're dealing with a whole bunch of obstacles that most states or territories are not. But what we're trying to do is also, work on these landlords who own these industrial buildings so that we can grow micro grows, things like that, manufacturing and processing mm-hmm. on a smaller square footage basis, so we can thrive and be a thriving market.
Is he setting up the market to be square footage based as opposed to plant based?
No, it's not. But what they are doing is trying to expand zoning so that we can get more processing and manufacturing, and cultivation is going to be cultivation. The problem is that you only have so many industrial buildings in an area of this nature or size. And so those buildings are a premium. So as you know, DC right now, price program in the country is the highest price program in the country. It will continue to be.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. I mean, any business, a business that's associated one block from the beach, you know, Virginia Beach or something, they're like, the rent is obviously 3 times more than the guy who's, in Southern Virginia or something. So it makes perfect sense that the price program would be dictated by a lot of like, how can we even have a place, 2,000 square feet, 5,000 square feet when it costs 4 times the amount of cost. I didn't really, it's hard because, when you are a traveler and you're outside looking, say, for a delivery, I'm going into DC, I want my delivery, I want to see the initial price shock and not be able to connect a lot of those dots off the rep. It seems like it's a hard barrier to entry. It's a hard pill to swallow. That's like, okay, yes, I guess I will buy my weed for $90 a gram in DC if that's what it is in DC. But it just seems when patients are so price conscious and convenience conscious with their purchasing, it's a hard thing to initially see that price, that cost, and understand it.
Well, it's the thing is like there's cheap cannabis and then there's expensive cannabis, right? But what we're seeing, say, in the Midwest, in Michigan, Ohio, especially like Missouri, Illinois, is a lot of these big MSOs are losing their shirt mm-hmm. because what they've done is gone in and build this 130, 150 square, 1,000 square foot building, but cannabis prices are not. People can't afford to pay $4,000 a unit.
Yeah, right.
Right. In DC, people are paying $3,500, $4,000 a unit, and it's offsetting some of the other problems. Mm-hmm. It is passed down to the consumer. So the guys that were in the black market that says that they were gifting $25, $30 no one can survive on that.
Yeah,
in a municipal market.
Yeah, so DC is not necessarily racing to the bottom. There, no. It's become a little bit more sustainable with how, and especially by changing the culture around the purchasing at that and accepting that off the rip. That's some of the hardest thing is that messaging to your customers of, we are selling this for $80 or $90, but. And to be able to almost start the market under that way seems a lot better than changing it after 3 years, going from 40 to 90. And I think
you're still going to have some $40, $45, cannabis.
And discounts will inevitably be around as they're clearing stock and resetting their shelves and stuff like that.
But I also think that it all goes to the grow, the genetics. And you guys know this. The better the cannabis, it's like, If you want to buy a Toyota, it's very reliable. It's not going to break down on you. It's going to give you that. It's not going to be, it's going to give you a good ride, but it's not going to give you a luxury ride. But if you drive up at Range Rover or Mercedes somewhere like that, you know what you're getting into. And you know it's going to cost you more money. You know, if people pay that for cocaine, why shouldn't they pay that for cannabis?
Well, it takes a hell of a lot of time to do it right when you actually care about what you're doing and you want to maintain your employees and the whole manner, the gamut of stuff, it's so important. I just couldn't imagine there not being a place for connoisseurs and the whole industry as a nationwide being racing to the bottom. I think, like, you know, I worked a lot with high-end glass. We would sell pipes that were $5,000 as opposed to $5 China banger that anybody could get. And there still was a market. And what I found were those connoisseurs were actually the ones that did the largest base of advertising for anything that I did. They talked the most. They had the most amount of people who listened to them and cared for their insight on what they were talking about. And so they built a lot of that loyalty for me, just being a connoisseur, just understanding the nature of why this is important.
And you said right, because you branded that way.
Correct.
Branding is everything. But when you have MSOs that come in and they don't care and they give you watered down products because they brand the watered down products just as good as what you were doing. And people catch on, and people in their mind, it's a psychological thing. Oh, it's $30. Oh, it's $40. It's good, but I don't. So now they start comparing cannabis when they go into other stores that is $50 or better. Because in their head, psychological is, I can get that $40. It wasn't.
Yeah.
But you've already in your head, in your thought process, you think that that product is better. Until somebody comes along and says, oh, this is garbage.
It does happen. We are talking with Terrence White, founder of Monco, also the committee chairman of the I-71 committee, talking about D.C., talking about legal cannabis, talking about luxury cannabis in the state of D.C. You can find links in the comments below in the description. Let me ask you this, Terrence, something Dustin and I have been talking about, something that Ohio is kind of struggling with and some other companies are struggling with, is the prevalence of legal cannabinoids, right? Everything we've been talking about, all this regulation, thanks to the 2018 Farm Bill, is all this stuff that tests. And there's a lot of legality loopholes. Shout out to DC. There are a lot of legal nuances that test above that 0.3% Delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol. And so you're seeing the rise. D8 probably the most commonly known. CBD is also up there. I'm a big advocate of just straight CBG if you get a chance to get that. But here's what's happening right now, Terrence. I don't know if this is hitting your mailbox, but I am now getting in my mailbox by the U.S. Post Office advertisements to buy 100% legal THC from companies like Mood. We've seen the rise. This is THCA. For sale in the mail that the U.S. Post Office is dropping in my mailbox just 2 days ago. This is where we're at right now. Not just gas stations, not just small head shops, like the rise of legal cannabinoids like THCA, which makes me think when you're talking about people who consume cannabis and say, this isn't quite the same.
You know why that is, right, BC?
Well, talk to me. I want to talk to you, your opinion on
I mean, the hemp-derived, but the marketing behind hemp-derived is
There's something out there called rescheduling, guys. And rescheduling cannabis from a Schedule 1 to a Schedule 3, who owns the most patents?
Government.
The FDA.
Yeah, right. But it's also this ambiguity that they're providing themselves with the marketing. Just saying the words legal cannabis is not saying hemp derived THCA.
It says it somewhere on there. Like it gets down to it in the fine print.
The bottom line, guys, is that now people are taking those chances that they wouldn't because there are no reschedulings on the horizon.
The horizon is different than it happening.
Think about how many chances guys were taking like me when I got in this market.
That's true.
$8.8 million in a store.
Exactly.
Because I took the chance basically saying that it was going to happen.
And why take that chance, Terrence? I mean, you're successful in a whole manner of other businesses besides cannabis. Why decide, not only do I want to take the high risk with this investment, and yes, it could pay off, but what is the drive for everybody to want to touch plant matter in this industry? Why do we all go for it and dream of the dispensary aspect? Or the
you had a whole successful thing in real estate, right?
With me, I also, you know, I'm one of the few that's vertical integrated in the city. I also are the founder of Pleasant Hill Wellness, right? Mm-hmm. So I wanted to be vertical from day one. Okay, everybody has different aspirations. No,
that makes perfect sense. It just makes business sense and efficiency sense to be vertically integrated, to have more control when you don't really know what the market is necessarily going to be, to have all these other revenue streams and tiers that you can actually work within and make a living or sustain yourself. That makes perfect sense. We don't really see that across the board on a lot of the people that we do talk to on here. A lot of them are just a dispensary owner or just a processor or just a cultivator. Well,
the thing is that a lot of people are they look at this through a micro lens versus a macro lens, right? I think that, you know, when you're a businessman, you have to understand how to control costs and how to grow a business and how to grow efficient. And with everything that you do, you have to make decisions based on the reality of how can I get to the next level? And it's okay, but think about it. I'm a dispensary. I gotta buy at wholesale, above wholesale, if I didn't become a cultivator or manufacturer. So now I'm eating into my profit margins. We got 280E double in here. We got 280 federal and we got 280E local.
Oh my gosh.
The math ain't mathing.
No, it's not. And you knew that when you took the $8 million risk. So is it that you took the risk because you knew you were going to be loud and fight the system to invoke change after you've already got in it? Or
before I even got into it, I said if I didn't get a seat at the table to make change and to actually be able to fight for people of color, because, you know, that's my biggest thing, flower to the people. Mm-hmm. As a person that is an advocacy for returned citizens like myself, and as a person who fights for people of color in a basically in a deprived community, no one has suffered more on the war on drugs than people look like me.
Absolutely.
Okay. And we can chalk it up all you want.
Continuing to fucking every, seven times
every drug law, with the exception of methamphetamines and fentanyl, has been because, and even those, is because of people who look like me. So let's not get this, we got to keep it real.
I mean, I noticed even in Columbus, 2 hours south, the arrest rates are black and brown are seven times more likelihood to be arrested. And that's year's statistics.
And the reason being is what we're talking about, cannabis. That's the first reason for them stopping it, a joint.
Yep.
That's where it started, and especially most rural America.
Yep.
When Deputy Fife ain't got nothing else to do, he's gonna profile a black or brown person and a kid for smoking a joint. That's something in 1984 our Supreme Court deemed as being good medical, but we said we keep turning our back. And every drug bill that we had since 1936-37, first it was because they felt like white women were going to sleep with black men. That's all they needed. That's it. This is when the only thing that the Confederate war had in common, they both wore hemp clothing. Then you fast forward, you go to the 60s. What happened in the 60s? Martin Luther King, the riots. The Drug Act Bill of 1970 did what? Made cannabis a Schedule I drug, because they said African Americans burn cities down. We pushed for Rodney King, crack cocaine. What we blame most guys that's in prison in your state, which is a swing state, most black guys my age, 47 to 50, they're not going to vote for Joe Biden. 100-1.
Really? You would think they would. No, I would not. I'm shocked by that. Hold on a second. I am.
For that time in prison, if they got locked up,
yeah,
that 100-1 law,
yeah,
that Obama overturned, that's who they blamed for it. And it wasn't necessarily his fault and his fault alone. But that's what happened. So if you look at the history of America, and if you look at the politics of America, you understand why we are where we are today.
Right.
It's always an event that leads to something that hurts one community. So we, you know, and I know you guys, systematic racism. It's true.
So what do we...
Jim Crow. This is modern day Jim Crow, guys.
Yeah, right. So what the... It's modern day Jim Crow with an echo chamber that is so huge and so easy to figure it out. Why is it that so many people are still able to turn a blind eye to it? I mean, it's so easy and rampant to see that it just almost boggles my mind.
Baffling that it still exists. I'm like, how do we change it? It seems so, we talk about it. We have folks that talk about it. We appreciate you talk about it. How do we fix it? It makes it seem like it should be through the political system. But now I'm learning that, you know, more people may not vote for someone who I feel would be more on their side, but I see your point. It becomes very complicated if you feel you can't vote for either party then, right? Like, well, then you just
get to a point where if you look in those states and you think about it now, and I'll give you some just background.
Yeah.
I got a brother who's 62 years old. He, out of 62 being 60, he spent almost 37 years in prison. Out of 62 years here on this earth. And if we take him, and if you ask him about Joe Biden today, he's going to tell you to go fuck yourself. He's in New Jersey. Joe Biden will win New Jersey. But if we get into Pennsylvania and you think about Joe Biden losing 20 to 25% of an age range, and that they're Latino, right, and they're African Americans, it ain't just because they're influenced people who have money. No. These are guys who now can vote. Mm-hmm. And they sit in jail for 20, 25 years on a law that if I got a gram of cocaine, if it's a gram of crack, it's 100 times.
Right.
No, them guys ain't forgot that.
Right.
You can't, and you can't even ask them to forget it.
No, and exactly. You cannot ask them to forget that. How could you?
So, as so many things that this administration has done, infrastructure, prescription, things of that nature, hey, I'm all in favor of it. But let's just call it what it is. The president has the right to say, I want to reschedule decriminalized cannabis. Do you know how many votes, if he said today, how many votes he would get for just rescheduling? Because then you got a safer bank. People like me can go to a bank. If I got the Safer Bank Act passes, I'm in the black. I can go get a loan.
Yep.
It is weird to me that it hasn't happened. I actually thought near the end of the Trump administration, so before the Biden-Trump, I thought that would be, I think we talked about it somewhere, that would be a card that he would pull out at the end, right, to kind of get these last-minute votes, because it would seem that it would make someone very popular. We have another election coming up. Biden has that potential. It seems unlikely. Why do you, being in the heart of DC, being in the heart of a lot of that, like, why has it not happened yet? I know it's a complicated question, but it sometimes boggles my mind. Like, what is the holdup?
You know, I thought once the Health and Human Service case study came out, I think there was over 260 case studies about how cannabis medically has helped people and with different facets of illnesses, right? Cancer, MS, leukemia, just to state a few, right? I honestly don't know. And, you know, I don't know, because of this older politic generation, they have to actually die off.
The fact that we keep reelecting them to keep going to DC is mind boggling to me. I am
right. Right, but
new politicians scared.
That's one like we need new progressive people in to give us. Now, I was told that, and I'm pretty sure you guys been that the DEA makes this decision themselves, and that, but we know nothing only comes but from the president, right? I was told that this was going to happen after Super Tuesday. He spoke about it on the state of the union about cannabis. He touched on it. Well, here we are in an election that's tight. And if he can help one community, it's the African-American or community of color, by saying, I'm going to reschedule cannabis. That's the first step. But I've asked my lobbyists and some people, let's have a conversation with some of these people. Because, you know, our community needs healing. You know, we're more rampant of number one, single parenting, domestic violence in the household, major crimes, and also homicides, right? To go on. Let's have a conversation. And that conversation needs to be had, number one, from a healing, because we can't just bring, and I'm just not blaming Joe Biden.
No, but I will blame the last 50 years of people systematically working to destroy families and build highways in the middle of you know, burgeoning neighborhoods, and to, you know, one by one target in such a way that I don't like looking at the problem and saying these are the rates of abuse, these are the rates as they are today, without saying we systematically as a country did that. We purposely whittled away every single one of these things in order to facilitate that and facilitate the numbers that they are today. How do we not?
Question. It comes down to this. Number one, the United States has more private jails than any other country in the world.
It is a big business, though. One of the largest businesses. So
we continue to fill jails with people of color, right?
Yeah.
We talk about the war at the border, but we don't also talk about most of these people that come in. They're not criminals. They're just trying to escape from the same thing that our forefathers try to do escape from. Poverty. Right now, we have the highest level of poverty in this country that we ever had. There's all types of things that are happening that we do not understand. But these lawmakers, they got loopholes. They come to Washington with little money or middle class, and they leave multimillionaires.
Yeah, that is my issue. Exactly.
And not only that, they stay here 20, 30, forever, no terms. No, you know, and so you're talking about a system that is broken overall. Now, and look at this. So integration started in the 60s. When blacks and whites were segregated, a lot of older folks felt like we got the best educations, whatever, you know what I'm saying? A lot of different things happened that were better for communities, right? Mm-hmm. Well, we integrated into one system, one school, one whatever. The most segregated place I ever been was prison. But if you look at what Congress is today, is that not segregation?
Exactly.
Is that not segregation at its best? We've been talking about integration all our lives, about how Martin Luther King said he just wanted us as a country, our kids and our kids' kids, to get along without looking at color. But though we send people to Washington every day, and that's all they see is color.
Yep.
And the fact that we can have this conversation in 2024, we're the richest country in the world.
Right.
With the highest crime rate in the world. And we're still in D.C., regulated. We're a liberal city that's regulated has become very conservative when it in terms of business and operations. And when you look at these things, you stretch your head because you can't understand. I live on Capitol Hill. I can actually look out my window and see the Capitol right now.
Wow.
When the riots happened, when January 6th happened, you would have thought it was a movie. So I can tell you this, as a longtime Washingtonian, a native, I'm not a native of Washington. I've been here 28 years on and off. I've seen more. I've been through the real estate gentrification. I understand. I've overcome so many things and seen the city overcome to it's a triple A bonded. And I remember DC was in the red, couldn't even pay taxes. That's why gentrification was pushed. And I can tell you what crack and what drugs did to a territory. This city, it tore it up. It separated so many kids and their fathers.
Yes.
And this goes back to why I fight every day so that we can have a recreational market. Because this city is owed some type of justice, appropriations, yeah, reciprocity, however you want to name it. If it's not one city in America, it's DC.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible to hear. And the passion just, I mean, it exudes from you, Terrence. We're talking with Terrence White, founder of Monco, also committee chairman of the I-71 committee, talking about legal cannabis in D.C., some of the amazing work that you've done with Monco and your dispensary. I want to give a quick shout out before we let you go. I know you just hosted recently and celebrated some women in cannabis as well. We have another kind of class of folks who are typically not given their due in the industry. So I appreciate you putting that message out. Yeah. Talked about it on your blog. You can find information on the social media sites and the links below about that, right? So celebrating. What was the impetus to do that as well, to just have this kind of women of cannabis in the area celebration?
It's all part of Flower to the People, man. And that's my advocacy. That's working with women. I promised my mother when I got into this business that I would, if I could do anything, I would highlight women, allow them to shine in a space that they're so underrated and haven't undervalued. And what I wanted to do is my second annual Women in Cannabis. And shout out to Linda Green, who was my first Trailblazer of the Year award. She was the first woman in D.C. and not only woman, but woman of color to get a legal medical license here in the district. She's done phenomenal work, not only in the cannabis, but she's a mentor to many, including myself. But, you know, her and I started this thing, and what we wanted to do was continue to highlight women and put them on their own platform.
Yep.
And take that glass ceiling over their head and let them know that not only they're valued, but they're appreciated. So that was that for me. My late mother was a trailblazer herself. She taught for 34 years, education. She fought for Blacks to vote, get out the vote drives. Any way she could serve a community, she did. And so I had the example or in front of me every day, yeah, to actually showcase this. And I'm praying and hoping that this event only gets bigger each year. And I appreciate you asking me about it.
What, Terrence, every day you're waking up in the face of this fight, what brings the passion to you? What excites you about cannabis coming up in the next 3-4 years? What excites you about Monco, about, you know, like what truly is driving? Because it's not just the fight and the need to make change. There's got to be something else that's bringing you so much joy that really helps when you are in the thick of it, when you are truly in the trenches in the fight, that you can remind yourself of what is that?
Well, I think it's the determination and passion. It's just to once I start something, I got to finish it.
Guys. Yeah, I know that one.
And I think that the challenges here are outnumber most. You know, we're in unterritorial waters. We're in a unterritory industry that's been pretty much, you know, it's new. You're putting in the foundations, the roads, the sidewalks, everything, right? When I was in real estate, that industry has matured. Cannabis, although it's been around 2,000 years that we can bring it back to, right, it's still unmature here in the United States, and it's undervalued. And the plant means so much to so many people. But I think the bigger all is that I have my own dreams and aspirations, and cannabis is become those dreams and aspirations. And not only to help me, but to help people like me. I think that, you know, for once, you know, my grandfathers and great grandfather was bootleggers, right? The government took those aspirations and dreams, how they built the house that we still own in our family with selling moonshine. They took those things away from them. You know, why not be part of something new, something innovative, something exciting, but most of all, something that helps people day in and day out.
Right.
Alcohol kills people day in and day out. Cannabis don't kill people day in and day out. Now, are there other issues? Absolutely. But with anything in moderation, it's good for the both. So it's THC and CBD is inside your body. We have cannabinoid systems. And that's what we're made up. Our skin, our hair follicles, all those type things, right? That CBD and THC has a part of. So, you know, this fight is a fight that I've deemed as mine. It's bigger than me, though, guys. I need help. I need political help. I need, you know, the congressmen and senators from Ohio that listen to your show, or their kids or grandkids listen to your show. Hey, get involved. Let's get this overturned. We always talk about free will and trade, free trade in other states and countries. Why can't cannabis be here in D.C.?
No, it clearly should be. I will say we had a whole episode where we trashed a lot of the governorship of Ohio, so I don't think they're going to listen to us anymore. What happens? Governor Youngkin's not listening to us anymore either after we called him a bum on the show, too. That's what happens, right? Friends.
Sometimes you got to call it like it is, guys. And I mean,
it happens.
It happens, right.
We've been talking with Terrence White, founder of Monco, committee chairman of the I-71 committee. Terrence, thank you for joining us today. Thank you for bringing the passion, sharing your story in a way that I don't know if everyone talks about so openly and so honestly. And I think that is what made today a really enjoyable. You know how I know it's a great show? I barely talked. Dustin talked all the time, so he's all passionate. I don't get to make myself. I still want to talk about if it's good for cocaine, it's good for cannabis is the best cannabis marketing tagline I've ever heard. I think you should run with that. If it works in cocaine, why not weed? I love it. Terrence White, founder of Monco, committee chairman. You're amazing, you were awesome today, Terrence. Thank you for joining us on the show. We really appreciate
it. I'd love to come back.
You're definitely coming back. You're absolutely coming. We just got the backstory today. We gotta talk more fun stuff going forward. Thank you, Terrence, for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
All right, Dustin Cava, man, love it, right?
I didn't even realize it was time yet. I was like, we could have gone another hour.
I was just finding my moment to talk, and it's just you and interview. And that's how I know it's good, though. When you get into it so much that you take over and I don't get to barely talk the whole episode, that's how we know it's a good one. That's how you know today was a good episode. Hopefully you hit subscribe on that button. You hit follow if you're listening on Spotify so you can get the brand new episodes every single Wednesday, 4:20 p.m. on YouTube, or Thursdays on Spotify with video and anywhere that you listen to audio podcasts. Follow us socially at MeetWM. You'll find all of the links for Terrence in the description below, his social media, Monco Dispensary, the I-71 committee. Give him a follow. Give him a shout if you're in that area. We got some listeners in there. We've had a few guests from Maryland area. Give him some props. We want to continue to fight this fight as much as we can. We will keep doing that here on this podcast as long as we can get access to great folks like Terrence. Shout out to Zoe Wilder as well for hooking us up. Dustin, another great episode. More great interviews coming up in the future. Got a lot of great guests lined up. Looking forward to talking with them. We'll see you next week, Dustin.
Thank you, everyone.